Good morning, members of colleagues that I come late. Mrs. Twala also is stuck in traffic, so we're both in that similar situation. I don't know what was going on there. Today we have an agenda item we also apologize that we have get this smaller venue because we also have been informed that the number of other stakeholders had an interest to come through here, but because of the venue size, they were not able to come through. We have a few apologies, members. One apology that has come through is from Mrs. Schumat Peterson, Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. She cannot be with us today as per this correspondence. She is attending in AFATA, a general meeting in Victoria. That's a correspondence from her parliamentary liaison officer, Mrs. Renee Thompson. Mr. Gaylor is not going to be with us for the week of the 22nd to the 25th of October. As the correspondence from his assistant, Mrs. Velasco. And also a correspondence from Mrs. Palito herself, who is not going to be able to be with us today. She has a challenge with transportation from her constituency. She will join upon arrival our meeting. We did go through some responses from the department on Wednesday. We did go through some responses with the committee, with the department on Wednesday last week, which meeting ran up until late. So we are allowing the department once again to table those responses and for us to deliberate on those responses. We do have a whole day to ourselves, as we are to be expected to deliberate in the afternoon on responses, submissions by stakeholders, and responses from the department. It shall entirely be upon us for us to be able to. The program here says we shall run up until 8 in the evening. But again, it is entirely up to us for us to be able. Moreover, that a fair amount of those responses has come through from the department when we met. Then we shall take it from there. And unless members have other things to say, and perhaps we might. We did apologize. advise to our stakeholders that unfortunately the venue that we could get, we were not able to get a bigger venue. Yes, you are entitled to come and attend because these meetings are public meetings. Though I must mention that this now becomes a process for a committee of parliament to process its own what's the word used, English being my seventh language. But in a nutshell, it is for parliamentary committee to take these processes forward. Between the department and also the committee and anybody else who is attending is here to listen and to observe. So as I was saying, you are more than welcome, you know, to be party to this meeting in terms of coming to listen and also to observe. That's as far as a participation for everybody else who is outside of parliamentary committee members, who is outside of the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. I trust that is in order. We can bring chairs, I'm sure we are allowed to do that, and then sit, and then even come put up some of those chairs, and there is another chair here for anybody else who wants to make use of. In the absence of anything else, this then becomes an opportunity for the department to take us through the responses on the submissions presented by the stakeholders Tuesday and Wednesday last week. Thank you. us to do, it is for us to be guided as per our program. We are supposed to do exactly that. And you must also remember, we even mentioned on Wednesday that we do have scheduled this session. So it is upon us, therefore, to see how best to take this process forward. What I would propose you do, we take a discussion on the basis of our own listening to the program as presentations were submitted by everybody else, and then we see how best we take this process forward. That shall border very much thinly on us deliberating on the actual legislation itself, based on the submission. What do you members have in mind? Sorry, throw a question. Is that what members would wish to do, rather than listening to same submission which was presented by the department? We throw questions, as we shall have been taking notes. Are we fine? And then we can do that for the next hour, and then we do deliberation thereafter on the actual legislation itself. Okay. The session is now open for deliberation. for questions, sorry. Mrs. Dane, Mrs. Peters Mosfane. Did I see your hand up, Mama? Oh, sorry. Mr. Steyn, for now, Mr. Van Dalen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, and I also want to thank the department for sitting out all the presentations to us in the document, although I think many of the oral presentations were not really responded to, Chairperson, but at least we were there to listen to that. Chairperson, at the onset, I need to just say that I am concerned that this we are discussing this amendment bill without us really having seen or discussed before with the department the small-scale fishing policy. Because we are in a position of not having all the information at hand to make a the English is also not informed decision, Chairperson, and I really would like to see if the department could rather give us a copy of the small-scale fishing policy and not all the bills and the acts on the cooperatives. We have been part of the cooperative session when it was passed in legislation in this house, so I think we all do understand the cooperatives. We're not worried about the cooperatives. We're worried about the small-scale fishing policy per se. That will be the driving of this bill if we pass it, Chairperson. Then, Chairperson, maybe I saw it somewhere in the slides here, also to clear something, that we are not against cooperatives. I have no problem. The Democratic Alliance, myself and my colleague, have no problem with cooperatives. We understand cooperatives. We, in fact, we support cooperatives. But what we have a problem with is people are forced to form part of a cooperative without the choice. And that is what I'm worried about, Chairperson, and that is why we need to see the
Sorry. Can we have order? I did say from the onset, this meeting for now, because the public hearings were on Tuesday and Wednesday. And if you listen very well, when the public hearings were were on course. If you listen very well, there was no one member of parliament who interjected, who spoke. There was none. We all listened attentively for a simple reason. We respected you. Second reason, we respect this institution, that it has to be ordered. There is no other reason. We shall then expect exactly the same to happen. Because I did say, this now becomes a process for members of parliament to interact with the legislation, both in terms of the presentations and submissions, and also in terms of the responses from the department. Presentations by all the stakeholders, from Fish South Africa to Masifundise to Coastal Link to United Fisheries Front, and all the individuals, we listened, legal resources, we listened attentively, we made notes. We are now responding to those. It becomes a democratic process for every member of parliament to air his or her views. Whether we agree, whether we like those views, it's not going to be a matter for us to be concerned about. As members of parliament and also as stakeholders. It is worse for stakeholders. As I repeat, stakeholders are not supposed to participate. May we have that in order, if you don't mind, please. That shall be appreciated. Thank you. Sorry, Mr. Stephen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chief, so just to clear that up, and I would also please respect also the stakeholders and the department's view that if we ask questions, please do not see it as an attack on not wanting cooperatives. It is our role, as the chairperson has just said, as members of parliament, to ensure that when we pass legislation that it is to the best of the communities. We are representing communities here, so that when we go, when we this committee needs to represent this board into parliament, and we need to support it as a committee there to say that we agree that we think it's the best bill that we could bring to parliament, so that we don't have to go into parliament like it has happened in the past, that there's a vote against it from specific members of a specific portfolio. So we are trying our best to, when we take this bill to Parliament, that as a committee we will agree on what it is. But we can't do it if certain members of the committee have reservations and we are not sure on certain issues. So can we please just clarify that and to make sure that when we pass this in this committee, that we all know that this will be to the best of the fishing communities out there, and that it won't maybe have to go through a constitutional review process, or that people can come up and say this was not a constitutional process, or all the things. That is the job of the committee to ensure that. So we need to clarify that for a start, Chairperson. Then, Chair, I will ask my first round of questions just linked on, based on the document from the department. I will, on the second round and later, based on certain other issues that members brought to the portfolio in their presentations that was not in this document. The first one I wanted to ask, Chairperson, on the SAUFF, the United Fishing Front or whatever, the department says here on slide 4, fact, which this SAUFF, which Mr. Garcia represents, did not exist when the MTT was democratically elected in 2007, only elected members were allowed to attend meetings of the NTT. Chair, I want the department to give me guidance and clarity on this. This is now for 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. It's 6 years like this. So no other person could be brought on board. So for me personally, Chair, it's a problem. We have sent back balls in this committee where, you know, when the ball actually landed on the table, the last time that the department met with the communities on that specific ball, which was the farm seeds and fertilizers ball, was 2 years back. We are now discussing something that started 7 years ago. I want to know what was the role of the department in getting other people's input in this, which were not originally part of the process, because for me it becomes a problem of keeping people out, and maybe that is why some people felt they were not part of the process. So if you can just clarify that to me. How did you take people's views into consideration? Then, Chairperson, the small-scale fishing policy has been approved by Cabinet in July 2012. Was there no need to bring it to the portfolio, and why did you not see a need? Because, you know, that, as I said in the beginning, for me, it's a problem, because I find it difficult to process this bill if I don't have the small-scale fishery policy in front of me, although I've read it, but, you know, so that we can clarify a whole lot of issues that is really having some problems for me. Then, Chairperson, on slide 5, the department also said under misrepresentation of facts, their first bullet point there, perspective is important, representativity, and they say one member organization versus 4,000 member organizations. Chair, I just also find it difficult. In the Constitution, you can be one person. It doesn't matter. You don't. I can understand that certain people represent more communities and more members, but we cannot say we cannot listen to a person because it's just one person. Anyone is free before the law to come and make a presentation before Parliament, and I don't want us to have an attitude that we can't listen to one person because he's only representing himself as one person, Chair. I just find it a bit problematic if we say that we are a constitutional country and we listen to people's views. Then, Chairperson, the thing that really baffles me, and maybe why I don't understand it is because I'm not clear on the full small-scale fishing policy, is on slides 8 and 9. The last two bullet points of 8 and the first two of 9, where the department speaks about the two allocation processes will apply when the bill is passed. And it speaks about the local commercial fishing rights, and it speaks about the whole allocation and registration for the cooperatives. I would really like the department to take some time to explain it to us, or to me then specifically, so that I can be clear in my mind that if we pass this bill, no person out there will be put in a position that he is forced to join a cooperative. If people want to join cooperatives out of free will and they want to do it that way, I have no problem and I will support that. But if people cannot have a fishing right because he doesn't want to join a cooperative, I will have a problem with that because I think that will be unconstitutional. And then, Chairperson, on slide 11, the second bullet point where the department says, fact, the small-scale fishing communities in Eastern Cape, KZN, Northern Cape and Western Cape were consulted and the overwhelming majority of them supported by the small-scale fishing policy and the bill. If the department can maybe just give us a list of how many meetings were held, where these meetings were held, and how many people attended all these meetings so that we can just have clarity to ourselves of how... Sorry? It's slide 11, Chair. So that we can just check, you know, on how many meetings were held in all the other areas. We did ask it in the beginning that for us as a portfolio, it was a concern that we are only having this public hearings in Cape Town, and if other people in other provinces had the chance to participate in this process. It's also part of our legislative duty to make sure that people in the rest of the world, not the world, of the country have participated. Then Jefferson slide 13, the second bullet fact about the funding. We have approached Treasury for funding. Can the department just tell us again what will be the amount that will be used needed to put this small-scale fishing process and the board in place, and how far are you with the funding? What will happen in December if the process will start, or in January if the process will start and you don't have the funding? Do you have a plan B in place, and how will that impact on the board? I think, Jefferson, that just on the local legal resource centres, possibility of legal action to recognise pre-existing customary rights. Again, Chair, because I don't have the small-scale fishing policy, I don't know what it says in the fishing policy. How will this rights, traditional rights, be scaremed, be protected? So that we can just maybe get something on this. I think I will stop there at this stage, Chair. I can give other members other questions, and then we can ask
Mr.
other members.
Chairperson, thank you very much. On slide 50, on slide 12, it talks about the proposed MLRA amendment bill, the amendments that is done, and then the fact the department says that the implementation of the small-scale fishing policy will have profound social and economic benefits for small-scale fishing communities. We agree totally with that, and we want that. And then it says ecological impacts, if any, will be managed by the department, as it will continue to manage our fish resources in a sustainable manner. This is, however, dependent on the adoption of the bill. In our view, there is no conflict of chapter 6 of the NDP, which is just there as an afterthought. Now, my question is, management of the fishing resource. We have the scientific working group that sets the TACs, and that if we agree with it or not agree with it, it's a legal entity. It's required by law that the TACs are set and that you should obey those TACs. At the hearings we did hear that people don't agree with it, which I have no problem with, and we should look at that at another time on how we're going to accommodate the inclusion of indigenous knowledge and small-scale fishes in that decision-making, if that is at all possible. I think that is very important. But then, at the moment, we have different categories, of which recreational fishing is also one. Now, I've been receiving some letters from the recreational fishing people, and they are telling me that the TAC for recreational fishing will now be cut this year by 100 tons. They will only be getting 85 tons instead of the 185 tons this year. Now, obviously, to accommodate everybody and the decisions of the minister not to change or keep to the recovery plan of West Coast rock lobster, which was quite important, this 100 tons that is now being implicated. I mean, all indications are that scientists are telling us that stocks are very much depleted. I know we all don't agree with it, but I still need to ask this question, is that, you have to rob Peter to pay Paul. And, I mean, is it right to take away from the recreational fishing industry 75% of their quota
and then nobody else has to pay you. Take it totally just from them. And I think it is unfair. I think those people have, if it is true what they are telling me, they have a leg to stand on, that you should look at that. This taking 100 tons away from a grouping. It's also this bill, which we now will amend, will include small-scale fishing into the bill, but it's only based on a policy. A policy can change overnight. A policy don't have to come to Parliament to be changed. It goes through the Minister and then Cabinet and NEDLAC, and then they decide on what they want to do. Whereas if we would have redone the bill, that small-scale fishing policy would have been carried over into the bill and everything would have been set in legislation, which will now not happen. So my question is, you know, okay, we now are going to recognize small-scale fishing policy. The small-scale fishers, which is a very good thing. We want it for a long time. It's not because of industry, but because of the departments or the lack of the will to do that in the last couple of years that we didn't see it. And it's right that it should happen. But then, you know, I talked about the fish cake, and you said you're going to make the cake rise better. That's all good and well, but then your actions show that you're going to take it away from somewhere, and I don't think that is quite the way or the intent of it. Then the interim relief kicks in on the 15th of November, and the people have agreed to a reduced TAC, which means that they would only be able to catch 139 kilograms of rock lobster, but they'll get a better price for it, so they are not too worried about that. And then there will be more, 300 more people accommodated in it. Now this policy, this will start on the 15th of November. Then if the bill kicks in on the 1st of January, then there will be another round of allocation to the cooperatives. Could you maybe just explain to us how that is going to work? I've heard different stories from different people how this will be kicking in. I think the fishing communities think they're going to get a double whammy this year with rock lobster. They think that the 130 kilograms will end in December, and then in the new year they'll get another chance to catch. I don't know where they get this idea from, but please explain that if it's the truth or not, and how you see this is going to play out when the bill kicks in at the end of the year. Say we all support it, it goes through Parliament, and the bill kicks in on the 1st of January, I think, how that is going to pan out and what the benefits are that the community are actually going to receive. And then going forward, how do you see that playing out? That is what I would like to know. Thank you. Mama, please, my son.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we had this public hearing 2 days last week, and the groups were there, even individuals. But what we were hearing, Chairperson, is that the majority. By the way, that public hearing was the most, you know, well attended public hearing, and majority in that public hearing, Chairperson, I even said, is as if they agreed with this MLRA. They agreed. And remember, Chairperson, it's us, this committee, who said the department should go and held public hearings with the fishing communities, and we even suggested the provinces, and the department did that to show that they did that. Is when people from those places, we had them in the public hearings, and Chairperson, Now, I thought after the public hearings, I thought that we as the committee, we have listened to the people. We should interrogate what the department is saying. And not, you know, coming up with many things as if we are studying. We are not studying. We are in the middle of this amendment. We are not studying.
Mm.
And, you know, we want the way forward. We must not, you know, come with many things to block this amendment. If long we have been waiting for it, and if long people have been waiting for it, as for now, we just need to polish there and there and there and there, and let this thing be passed. And Chairperson, on page 14, it's page 14. When the department responded from the LRC, they are saying these communities, fishing communities, will be assisted. And that is what we are looking for, that these communities must be assisted. It's either, you know, forming cooperatives is a very good thing, but it's in the hands of those people. They have to do it for their own good. And what I like here is that the department is saying these communities will be assisted. That is what we are looking for. That is the community. This community must be assisted by our department. And Chairperson, thank you. But really, the people, always we are saying, the people have spoken. The people have spoken. It must not be now, it's like the committee is starting to go into this thing. It's long we have been with this thing. Thank you.
Chair? Thank you very much. I think I must say thank you for the people who make presentations, but there are some few questions that I think I want to put, maybe taking us forward also. The first one relates to the quantified resources that we would need to implement this bill, the 424 million, which is projected for 5 years. I would want to know, maybe, how did we? Firstly, the first one is that to have a quantified knowledge of the population we're talking about of the small scale fishers. Firstly, because we should understand and quantify this population. Do we have tangible numbers that we're talking about how many people, or we just tamsak the number of the money we would need? Because if you talk cooperatives, I'll come later to that. You talk about support and so on and so on. Do we understand the quantified number of the population? The 424 million, how did we get there? Is it based on my first question? That was the knowledge of the population talk about and the needs. If we fail, for instance, to acquire, I'm asking this because there are legislation where they saved Meat and Safety Act, which there was no money allocated for its implementation. The Department of Agriculture, Fisheries, explained to us. Now, if we do not acquire through Treasury, because this might have to go to Treasury,
this 424 million, what happens to this bill? Will it be able to implement? Is there an alternative funding for it, for us to implement it? Because if you do not have the quantified money or an alternative resource where you will take to, if Treasury said, no, we are not considering putting the money, what are you going to do? Or are we going to have a bill such as the Safety and Need Act that could stay for us for another 15 to 20 years without being implemented? I'm raising this because I can hear the passion from the people that the people want real action. I think the people, the reason why they were not talking on the subject of the bill, they were talking on the pain. They want to see change in their lives. But now they don't care about what is written there. They have lived this. That's why they are saying they are indigenous people, have knowledge of this. To them, they see this as something that will happen tomorrow. And what do you do with that expectation? And I think we should deal with that. Must not create a very big expectation. Because if you, for instance, divide this money annually, you will find out that if you get this money, in your exposure, we have 85 million annually. Will that serve the interest? And this huge expectation I've seen from the people who are here, just talk to us. Just talk to us. On cooperatives, page 19. Let's say we have now these cooperatives, which I agree with the sentiments. I think even the DDG, in one of these pages, you are not necessarily saying, in my understanding, that you would have cooperatives and nothing else. I think you are also saying that there might be people who want to go individually. If it's like that, that you have choice for people, there are those who can go individually, there are those who can go in cooperatives. To me, that's fine. But if it's not like that, what are the constitutional implications in relation to choice of South Africans, that they can choose to partner or not to partner? What is that have to do? What support are we talking about here? You see, it doesn't help me, DGG, what you have said. You listed the number of acts and laws on cooperatives. We know we are used to this acts and laws. But my point is that cooperatives have failed even what is that framework. Not because of lack of legislation speaking on things, but the challenges that you find in the actual communities in working together. But what support are you going to give? Speak to us about maybe capital, because my view is that what makes cooperatives to fail in the main, it's lack of resources, money that is not at their disposal. It's lack of training. It's lack of understanding responsibility and working together. Therefore, tangible things that you think as a department you put in place. Lastly, having consulted with some stakeholders, there are issues that you might have missed that I'm just going to read. Some questions that is the entrenchment of one form of ownership in a fisheries policy legal. I think it speaks to what I was talking to, what I spoke to this, whether it's constitutional. Can DAF all offer a right in the small scale sector, which are economically viable? And can we really, even if you're not proving them now, can you just elaborate that can we be able to do so? How does DAF determine who represents fisheries and fishing communities? This speaks to what the chairperson tried to also speak to on Wednesday, that we should not, the responsibility of the South African government, parliament, is to make sure that the rights of each and every individual in South Africa is heard. That's what the chairperson say. Even if you are one, you can be 20,000. Your voice Yes, we are 20,000, but equally the voice of an individual is very important. Therefore, this question speaks to that. And I must say that it does not necessarily mean that if you were not in that meeting in 2007, you cannot make a viable contribution to this discussion. We are in 2013 now. There are other new people who might come in. Therefore, this thing, it looks so discriminating that if you were not there when this thing started, you cannot have a voice. We must be able to handle that DDG, not to over elevate other people at the expense of the other. Basically, I'm still going to come back. Those are my first basic questions. Thank you.
Let's take 20.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll start by supporting the Honourable Member, Mama Baliso, for what she has just said. And also to say that I'm not sure whether we are questioning the department if it did consult insofar as the issue of cooperatives are concerned. Because if it is that so, they must explain to us honestly if they did consult. And also to say, Chair, yes, there were challenges in the past in this unit of cooperatives. But I think all of us have identified those challenges. This is why we are saying that they are going to be giving support so that they don't make the very same mistake that they made. And another issue that I think we need to look at it very carefully is the issue of policies that we make. You see, to me, it would be a problem if we have a policy that says it's free for all. If I don't like this, I can do it this way. I don't think it would be correct. If a policy has been adopted, all of us should fall under the policy up until it is rearranged, if it is there is a need for that. I think we need to get into all those issues. Otherwise, there's nothing wrong with the cooperatives if they are supported in the manner that they're supposed to. And in fact, to me, we try to run away from people who want to be rich by themselves. Just one individual to be rich. We are trying that people should share things. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, yeah, you see the problem here basically is that we are talking of a lot of concepts. I think what is extremely important at the moment is that we want to empower our people. But is there any empirical evidence? You see, when I have nothing, Chair, I will fall for something at least, not knowing what the future really holds. And that is what we must be very careful for. And we don't create a situation where there are expectations amongst our people, and those expectations are not going to be met or are not met. That is more dangerous than not having any expectations at all. Now, Chairperson, yes, we have had failures with cooperatives in the past, especially where we tried to force people into something. But where in the olden days, cooperatives in the agricultural sector were born out of a need to try and do collective bargaining, to do collective marketing to try and get the best possible prices, those sort of co-ops worked. And there's no reason why that kind of model cannot work. But there is a qualification. The qualification, Chair, is that it will not help if these amendments are adopted, they come on the statute book, and when it comes to implementation, that has been our big problem in the past, the implementation. Now my question is, Chair, and I say it with all due respect, Ekprat Rekhit, we unfortunately have a department, and the leadership in that department changes like as fast as you change your nappies. Ja, vandag het jy hierdie ambtenaar daar en môre is daar iemand anders. Dan moet jy van voor af begin. So, Jefferson, we need to see that there is firstly a stable environment. If you have a stable environment, stable leadership, that is focused, that is dedicated, then anything can work. So dan moet eerlike mense wees. Then things will work. The other issue, Chair, is that we have this broad idea being bandied about that, you know, we'll have a co-op. But now remember, that co-op is made up of several different individuals, each one coming into it with his or her own aspirations, own expectations. Now you've got to mold these people together so that they must start working together. Een kan nie baas wees in die ander se klasse nie. Everyone is equal. So I would like to hear from the department chair that when you want this bill to be passed, you must be able to give us more meat. Actually, flesh for niks van iemand nie, sorry. More meat in the sense that we must know exactly how you plan to put these models together. Now, Chairperson, Mr. Banga spoke of this 424 million rand that was earmarked. I think it's in the current financial year. Quite rightly so, if by the 30th of April it's not utilized, the money is gone. But have you worked out whether that kind of funding is desirable, it is equitable, it is sufficient? Because you see, Chairperson, by throwing money at something, you are not going to assure success. It goes along with responsibility and the wherewithal to make it work. So we need to know, Chair, that on what basis, for argument's sake, in the present financial year, was that sort of figure arrived at? The other problem, Chairperson, is, you know, the other day I had this refrain that I heard so many times. Some of us are living in a different world. Of course, the sea is a different place. We don't know what's going on inside there. At least I don't know. Now, if I look at the status of the South African Marine Fishery Resources report of 2012, it says, amongst others, the following. The commercial fishery for abalone was reopened in 2010 after being closed in 2008. But this resource continues to decline due to increasing levels of poaching and remains in a depleted to heavily depleted state. Now if you take the Cape Southern coast, Hermanus upwards, you take for example the rock lobster in that part of the world, that is also at dangerous levels. And the problem, Chair, is that we want to do something, but that which we have, we are unable to protect. I mean, for months on end, the department has not been able to police the coastal line because they did not have vessels. I don't know what the current situation is, what is happening there, but when we talk of a basket of species, Chair, there's a whole basket of issues that need to be addressed if you are going to be able to satisfy the expectations and the aspirations of our people, Chair. This report says further, lionfish resources range from heavily depleted to optimal states, depending on species. Now, that's quite a statement, Chair. We need to know exactly where we stand now. This is a year later. Then, Chair, they say that given the low population sizes of many lionfish species, however, present management measures need to remain in place for sufficiently long so as to allow stock sizes to increase. Is that happening? This was said in 2012. Are those issues in place to see that we are able to exactly do that? Now, Chairperson, you take, for example, besides hake and pelagic fish, the rest of the species are in a negative state in terms of conservation status. The West Coast rock lobster is, there's a 16% cut, I make you understand, in total allowable catch as a result of part of a recovery plan. Abalone, as I've said, Chairperson, remains in a dangerous state due to the high poaching levels. What has the department achieved in the recent past in controlling poaching? So, Chairperson, that basket of species that's being spoken of is largely dependent on the extent to which we will be able to control poaching and other related problems. So, together with the possibility of such a bill going through, Chair, I'm told, for example, that if there are like-minded people in a co-op, those like-minded people will probably see to it that they police themselves those resources because those are their fishing grounds, and that the issue of poaching will then be minimized. Now, that is a long shot, but it is attainable. It is not impossible. But then the people will have to work together. And in order to do that, Chair, we need to have, together with other departments who actually passed the legislation on cooperatives, the Cooperatives Act, to come and tell us exactly how the communities are to be empowered. And as far as the whole issue of budgets are concerned, Chair, we need to have at least a plan that we are going to have so much available in the next financial year that the present budget, if not used, or whatever portion of that which is not utilized, will be rolled over, and to make it possible to roll it over. Unless there are those kinds of interventions, Chair, I'm afraid we may be creating expectations that we will not be able to meet. And I would like to hear from the department regarding all the issues that have been raised and perhaps engage them more. Thank you very much.
I saw the very last hand from Mr. Feller, and then before we... Okay. Okay, can we stop it there with Mr. Panga so that we allow the department to come through? And otherwise we can come back. We, as I said, have a whole day to ourselves. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to make note that my intention is not to suppress deliberations, arguments, or whatever. But, Chairperson, I would strongly appeal that we need to deal with issues at hand that are in front of us. in this committee so that we don't get astray and end up saying things that are not supposed to be said here. And there are issues, yes, that we need to discuss with the department. But I don't think some of the issues that you are raising here is the time for them to be raised. And also to say, Chairperson, I'll talk about my background from where I come from. I'm coming from a place called Tambuz and it's in Dale Peter Merritt's Bank. We grew up with all communities, Indians, colored, and whites, where I come from, up until the 70s. The reason why I'm raising this, I want you to show this meeting that cooperatives do well. You know, when my mother prepared food for us, it was not just for us only. It was for us as children. And we have this big basin where food is put in, and then we use our hands eating together. No one fought with anyone there. We ate. No one fought. No one was saying that, no, you're taking too much. No. We ate. And I know Honorable Abraham knows this thing that I'm talking about because it's old. Cooperatives do work. They do work. And we need to support them. Ours is just to ask the department to make sure that whoever is going to monitor this whole thing is a genuine person who's not going to let down the government terms.
I wanted to check the identified bucket of species, whether we're talking about an already identified species for the communities that you're talking about. Thank you, Chair. The debate on cooperatives, I think, will take, it's a very interesting one, but as we conclude this, because nobody, I don't think it's, South African legislation puts the issue of cooperatives. We promote it in South Africa. But we must not neglect our experiences. The department should be able to say, with the challenges cooperatives are facing, these are the mechanisms that are going to come up with to make sure that in this sphere of fisheries, what we have seen in housing, what we have seen in agriculture, it's not going to happen. In principle, even myself, I support cooperatives. But we must not behave as if we do not have lessons. These are lessons that are scientific, that have been proven by government, that there have been limitations that relate to training, working together, and financing of cooperatives. And I've seen cooperatives where people eat the chickens they're supposed to farm, the cattle they're supposed to farm. Those are serious. 20 million, the other, they charge the 20 million. Those are realities that we should not forget. Even at my house, we had a cooperative of brothers where we eat together. But we're not talking about those cooperatives. We're talking about bigger cooperatives of millions and millions of lives. Thank you.
I have requested that we try and limit at that point. We shall have the second round. What I wanted to deal with are two small ones. Number one, reading this bill itself, among others, it says, replace subsistence with small game. My simple understanding of this process that we're involved in now is that it promotes a hybrid. In other words, it promotes both a small scale and also a cooperative route. So that's the first one. The second one is that to an extent that the processes of consultations have gone, you have gone through a stage where in NEDLAC which pulls together all sections of society under one roof. That process has also been taken through as well. To an extent that you are now at a stage where in this process, upon conclusion here in the National Assembly, it goes via National Council of Provinces for concurrency. If you can also comment on that. I'm also very keen on on the support mechanism for both small scale and also for cooperatives. I'm very keen on that form of support. If the department can elaborate on that. Without getting into any specific details, the reasoning for this question or comment, it takes us back to the earlier discussion we had when we were discussing this whole process of right allocation. Because among others, we did ask a specific question about whether or not those that shall be applying shall have to require to hold or to possess any boats for themselves to be able to be eligible to apply and be successful ultimately. As we speak now, we have a process that shall lead me to a question outside of this legislation that we are about, which I feel quite passionate about. The passion relates to Section 21 of the Principal Act. That says the application Section 21, subsection 2, that relates to a matter that says an application to transfer commercial fishing rights or part thereof submitted to minister in a manner that the minister may determine and subject to the provisions of this act and so on. But to summarize that, that basically for me talks to a point that I say and I repeat again, I feel quite passionate about. It is a point of having to have received a fishing right. And within a short period of time, 1 year, 2 years, the person literally loses those rights. Now, I am saying, without having to be confined only to the minister being the one who says, no, this right. Can be any minister, regardless. But my view, quite strongly, is that we must have as part of a legislation, something that says, as a fishing right holder, you cannot sell your rights within a set period of time. You cannot part with your rights within a set period of time. It cannot be only a prerogative of a minister, whoever that minister could be. But it must be legislated here. So that you protect, because the experiences out there are such that the boat owner is at liberty to set that fishing right holder into certain terms that are beyond her control, his control. As a result, within no time, 2 years, because of the
the stringent measures suggested that fishing right owner gets to be exposed to. That fishing right owner, within no time, no, we can somewhere, you know, take this right. Because I cannot afford to meet your requirement. That's what I would really, in lieu of the fact that having had all these experiences, the fishing right holders, that they cannot necessarily have, they can have access to the pole. That's what is there in the pole. You can, as you apply, have access to the boat. Which means you are going to be scouting for boat owners. And the experience within squid is that over 99% of those boat owners are white. In that, it means, therefore, that you shall find those white boat owners still back. It's going to be business as usual. Because they are going to subject the fishing right holders into stringent terms that can only favor them as fishing right, as boat owners, not their fishing right holders. So without having to say, I have no problem having to have that Section 21, but in addition to that, you must be able to say a specific set of years, 7 years, that's what the housing situation tells us. You cannot sell your house, the RDP houses. And the issue is very simple for me. In Johannesburg, they've got gold. In Northwest, they have platinum and other resources. In Northern Cape, they have diamonds. You do not want to part ways with your gold. This fish is gold to our people. It is diamond to our people. It is platinum to our people. Do not sell your fishing rights, because you are selling away the future of your children. That's what we are trying to say here. Insofar as this issue is concerned, because it gets to heart very easily out of the hands of our people. Within no time, their gold, their platinum, their diamond is gone. Precisely because there are no measures in place in a legislation that say you cannot sell within a set period of time. I thought let's have those few questions and then we shall come back with the rest of the other questions. Once again, we have the whole day to ourselves. But by the look of things, we are certainly not going to be taking the whole day to ourselves. Department?
Just on a point of order. We were given a document that is marked secret, and I don't have a secret classification, so I wonder if we're not allowed to read it because it's classified. But it's been put in front of us. I think you should deal with that first. It's a document that was handed out now.
What's the fishing policy?
It's marked secret.
Yeah, but it was secret then. It just refused. It's something that has been passed through.
So whenever we receive a document marked secret, we should think that it was declassified. We should just do that. I don't think that the bill allows us to do that.
We'll come back to that, Mr. Vandana. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. Honorable members, thank you very much for those questions and comments. I might not address each and every, because some of the honorable members have raised a similar question, and I'll try to respond to that similar question together, if you allow me, Chairperson. Let me firstly say, I think in our presentation on Friday, we did indicate that we address each and every comment that the community or the public has made. Maybe I must just clarify that a little bit. There were some members that have raised operational matters, Mr. Klaasens, for instance, and Mr. Abdul Aziz, I think, from the Hottentots Holland communities. We have met with them to deal with those specific things, and there's going to continue to follow-up meetings with them. I think they spoke more about departmental issues and operational matters, and we are trying to address that with them directly. I have spoken to Mr. Klaasens, for instance, this morning, so I just wanted to reassure you that we have not forgotten those people that have raised specific issues. The small-scale fishing policy has been distributed to all parliamentarians. I think, let me just like find a date. I think it was in September it was distributed. I have asked my office to reproduce. We've put it in a user-friendly document now, which is both the policy and implementation plan. And if you would indulge me, I'm trying to get copies to you also as we speak, because it's going to be easier for you to understand it. I mean, to read it, because it's not a thick, long document. Firstly, I want to clarify once again, as I said before, the issue about cooperatives, and I think a number have raised that, that the perception still exists that people were forced into accepting the cooperatives and the issue about choice. Let me illustrate it, Chairperson, if you allow me. We have, in our discussions, we talk about the trolley road. We have two streams that we going to allocate rights. The one we call the trolley road, just for the ease of speaking, and the other one we call the mighty road or the basket road. The trolley road is the commercial side of the allocation process. Those are the ones that we have now advertised. People have filled in application forms, and we receive those application forms. So any person in the MLRA, the existing without the amendments, we've explained the kinds of rights holding that can be there in the MRA now, and in future if we make the amendments, there will be legally different kinds of rights holders can exist. But all of those different kinds of rights holders that can exist is on this trolley road for the ease of reference, where there will be a competitive process in that road, the trolley road. So any South African can get rights on that road as an individual, as a company, as a CC on that road. But this road, which is called the Mighty Road, the Basket Road, will be based on the policy. And that road is where that road will be the communal rights that will be allocated on that road. And these roads will not be in conflict with each other. So if you are on this road, the trolley road, you can't qualify to be on the Mighty Road. If you're on the Mighty Road, you can't qualify. You can't have two types of rights. I think this we have explained to the communities in all of the consultations that is taken place. And I hope maybe we will have time to present this maybe to the parliamentarians, because maybe I think the conceptual understanding of it is what is not 100% clear. And I think in one of the portfolio committees we did try to explain that particular approach that we will have. So the one is a competitive approach where anyone which have rights can be. But to give effect to the policy, we which was negotiated and agreed upon and approved, that road has this understanding about how the rights will be allocated. Maybe coming also to what was raised, maybe the issue that was raised also is, I just want to say, in the 3rd of September 2010, the policy was published for public comment in the Gazette 33530, Government Notice 852. So the policy was, when this small-scale fishing policy was published for public comment, and then Dennis will also even speak in more detail, if you allow us, around the whole consultation process that has taken place since then. So the point that I want to illustrate is that what we try to illustrate by the national task team that was elected, we couldn't add more people on the task team because that was a democratic process. But it didn't mean that anyone else who not on the task team was not consulted under policy. So South, Mr. Garcia, there's another organization, FISA, of Abigail Smith, all of them and other individuals and other people were consulted in the making of the policy. But the coordination of that process, we had to respect a process that was democratic. So maybe there's also a misunderstanding that in the making of the policy, it was in a dark room with a small group of NTT members, and it was only them. I was not even part of that process in the beginning who made the policy. No, the policy was made. It's an iterative process that people make comments, consultations have taken place with a wide range of South Africans in that process. So we agree with the sentiments that was raised. It doesn't mean if you were not in the national task team that you were not that you shouldn't be consulted. No, it was not like that. People were consulted. Also, I think a number of honourable members have raised this matter about the issue about perspective, and that if you constitutionally, and I think I said that Friday. It doesn't mean that we don't take in consideration what each and every individual says. All that we wanted to illustrate, sometimes the voice is of one individual overwhelms the voice of where you have thousands of people in an organization. All of those voices are taken in consideration, but and the key word was around perspective, around this thing, that we shouldn't elevate anyone above the other one. Okay, let me come to, I think, the issue that was raised, and hopefully if we are able to get this quickly. In this policy, this consolidated document, we have the policy, but we have the implementation plan also. Now, in the costing, and I think Honorable Member Abraham Van Dalen, Honorable Member Van Dalen, and Honorable Member Stein, and Honorable Member Banga raised this issue. In this document, which we've asked an expert service provider to develop this policy, to take the policy and then cost the policy. What will it cost to implement this policy? And that is where that figure comes from, and will provide the 424 million rand. The 424, also to clarify, is not an annual budget. It was over 5 years that we estimate it will cost. Now you must look at the elements of issues that we raise. Now all of them doesn't necessarily have to be implemented all at the same time. So we are trying to look at what are the essential things in January if the policy gets approved, the amendment gets approved. What are the essential elements that must be in place? For example, if I can make an example quickly, some of the costing that we're talking about is the capacity in the department. how will we able to support these fishing communities? And we are busy reorganizing the directorate of small scale fishing, which is at the moment, Abongile, how many people are you? 11 people. We have now ensured that in the next month or so, that directorate will have about 20, 30 people, which will be in the directorate. So that is one of the, because when this small scale fishing, you need to have capacity in the department to be able to support co-management structures, the cooperatives that will be there, so that the interaction must be there. That's one example. Then there's other things. I think the chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, you've also asked, what are the kind of supporting mechanisms that we, the practical, tangible, the Honorable Abraham used that word, the tangible, practical support that we're talking about. The tangible things which we are in our MOU with the Department of Trade and Industry is the issue about votes. Tangible issue for people to get access to boats for the small scale fishers. Those are the tangible things that we've already sort of concretized. I'm also very proud. I don't know if you see the advert which is started on Sunday. It was in Hout Bay where a particular person has received a boat already. And that's what we want to. The others are equipment. The issues about nets, which sometimes is a threat and so on. So those things we want to quantify. A third element is very important, and all of you have emphasized that matter, is the issue about training. Because we can have all of the good intentions, but if the members of that cooperative, and I think Mr. Jeffer have raised this issue about the issue about the forefoot. If we don't empower people to understand their role in the cooperative, their role should not only be the ones that wait for benefits to come, but there will be a division of labor around who must do what. So that part key, in fact, we are lobbying in our own department, either FET college that can specialize around the training for cooperatives. Now those things are not finalized, but that's the thinking that we have, that you, incidentally, someone raised it, Honorable Van Dalen, someone from the recreational people that we've met yesterday, and I'll come to that point, that we might engage with the technicon here, the technicon around, try to define a specific course for cooperatives, but also for fisheries and so on. So I just wanted to summarize. We hope we can give you this thing. But please, I also want to appeal, honorable members. This is not cast in stone. It's not the Bible, the Alpha Omega, because developmental work is a iterative process. You, as you go on, you learn, you improve, you see maybe this is not necessary and that is not necessary. So we don't want tomorrow to say, you promise you're going to do this. It's, we must work with the people that must will benefit from this so that they can also give their wisdom to us and improve this matter. I want to emphasize again, the scientific working groups is not a legislative process. It's an advisory group which the department has established. So it's our structure. And we want that structure because we have signed agreements internationally that we will manage our fisheries responsibly based on good science and as I explained, it's about sustainable development. So we'll never compromise on those things. That we must base, and that report that Honorable Abraham referred to, it is a report that was developed internally by the department scientists and the department's managers. So we have put that on the table to say, this is the status of the resource. Now, all of those resources that were managed, we have what we call OMPs, Operational Management Plans, procedures, which are linked to a recovery process for all of those species that are under threat. But the recovery plan is not developed by the department on its own and its scientists on its own, or its service provider, which is UCT's mathematical unit. It is also with the industry. There are members from the industry. One of the issues that we are trying to get better now is the criticism that you've also heard from the small-scale fishers, is to say, let's broaden that consultation of the scientific working group so that you bring in small-scale fishers, they can share, and from our side, we are trying to work out mechanisms. How do you document the data which is provided by the small-scale fishers so that it can be utilized as knowledge that can influence our thinking and our decision-making processes. So the science, there's always this misconception that the science of working groups are an independent structure working separate from the department. It's a departmental structure that works with us. The issue about the West Coast rock lobster that was raised, this is exactly what we are trying to do. We are consulting with all of the four categories in the West Coast rock lobster. We've agreed the scientific working group that we must cut the 16% which Honorable Abraham has raised for us to reach a 35% recovery plan by 2020-2021. So part of this process is in this OMP, in this recovery plan, there are mechanisms around how do you deal when there's an unforeseen environmental issue that takes place. So the first step is that we consult. We have now agreed 251 tons must be cut to meet the 16% requirement. So we are meeting with all of the affected stakeholders in that TAC. We've met with the Fish SA the representatives that are in the lobster. We've met with the nearshore people. We've met with the recreational people. And on, is it tomorrow? Yeah, tomorrow we bring them all together in one room to say, this is the situation that we're facing. Here is the difficult decisions that we must take, and so on. We've met, limit, because it was raised the issue about the recreational fishers. We are not targeting them specifically. We are cutting, or the proposed reduction must come from somewhere. So we are saying it must be the big industry who are creating jobs, who are saying to us they are creating jobs, and if you cut us now, we're going to lose jobs. We have to make this difficult decision to say to them, you have to carry some of the cuts. The recreational people, and we must be honest with ourselves, although there's an argument that is made. In fact, yesterday someone made this argument, if we cut the recreational people in Azerfontein, for instance, they have to let go of their garden boy. Now we must make the choice. Is the employment and that's the word that was used, it's not me, that I'm just quoting verbatim. The person that works in the garden of this recreational fisher, or is the choice for the people that came here in the public hearings to give them a quote, which is their livelihood. So this is a difficult choice. We are not there sitting, we want to target people specifically. But it's part of the recovery because we also don't, we are not trying to recover the resource to keep it in a museum. We are recovering the resource so that we can reallocate it if it's recovered to those that has been affected the most by it. Honorable Banga, I'm not sure if I understood your question correctly. The issue about the qualified number, it is we have built a implementation plan based on the existing
2,776 people, which we hope now to increase with the 300 who has been on standby for 3-4 years. That is our logic also. There are members in these communities who qualify, but because the resource is this challenge that we have, we've always had to say, you can't come part of this process. Now, in the discussions and consultation which we had with all of the small-scale fishing representatives, they said, look, we are willing to reduce our numbers if we can bring in our brothers and sisters who has been out of the process. Again, it was not us who have done this unilaterally. It is in the consultations that we have. But if I understand what you've requested around the issue about the cost and how did we come to the cost and so on, the cost was based on what are the things in the small scale fishing policy which require a costing. What are some of the things which I've mentioned now? And that is where we came to this implementation plan. As I said, it is also an evolving document where we see some of the things we can cover with our own budgets if we do creative rearrangements of our existing budgets. Some of it we'll have to get from other departments like Economic Development or DTI, and some of it we have applied for directly to Treasury and to the Sub-11 program. I think I've spoken to the tangible support, the issue about the entrenchment of one form of ownership. We are not saying, I think I've tried to explain it with the two streams of rights allocation that we're talking about, that there will be a choice on the trolley road. But on this road, and I think that is what I must say unequivocally, under Mighty Road, under Basket Road, it is by the policy which says this is the kind of rights holding that must be there on this road for people that choose to be on this road. I think Honorable Pele and Honorable Mshwane have just basically encouraged us that the bill must be amended. Honorable Avram, as always, you give us some of your very unique wisdoms and advice. I think, it is a challenge, but as I explained also in the past, we are trying to establish where I'm now. I don't see myself as an acting DDG, although I'm officially acting. I act as if I am the DDG. And everyone under me, they understand that this is what we must do, that whoever then comes will inherit a system that is entrenched, that can work and so on. It is unfortunately out of my hands the issue about creating stable leadership, but I think the department has moved extremely far now with this thing. The one thing which is very dear to my heart is the issue about honesty and the integrity of what we as an official dome must be. And I agree with your sentiments. This is the messages that I share every day with the department officials. In fact, I was, honorable members, I am trying to get legal advice to say, now I'm also going to be accused of trampling on people's constitutional rights. But if I get my way, I would want the officials in fisheries, not any one of us, to have a recreational permit. Because currently, because they're citizens of the country, we can also apply for at the post office for a recreational permit. But if I get my way, I've spoken to all of the officials to say, look, I don't want to trample on your rights. But that sends out a message. Because we are in charge of this allocation process. So if we can clear also this perception that are there, sometimes it's real, that we are not honest, and I think I take your advice around those things. issue about poaching, it is a real challenge and a problem. And I think you've highlighted, Honorable Abraham, but you also indirectly give the solution also. Because what you're saying is that if we involve, like, crime in general, the police is important and the policing is very important and it must be there. But if we involve our communities, if we involve those that can see the value, if they are they benefit from this resource, they will also look after. And that's the combination which we have. Our patrol vessels, and I don't want to go into the issues about vessels because that will also just maybe sidetrack us a little bit. But I can confirm, as was confirmed in the portfolio committee where the minister was, that those vessels, two of them are operational. But we are working very closely with all of the law enforcement agencies to ensure, because we don't want only, you've seen there are a number of arrests that has been made recently in the papers and so on. But for me, that is not necessarily a success story when someone has already stolen the resource and we arrest them. We must prevent the fish farm coming out of the sea. So we've made an assessment of the security at all of the slipways in the country to ensure that we secure those slipways so that people don't go to wrongly go to sea which are not supposed to be. So that remains a challenge. There's some technology that we are exploring to ensure that we are able to secure all of the slipways. But that remains one of the big challenges, the issue about poaching. Honorable Chairperson, I think you also raised a very, and I think your last issue that you raised, we are 100% in support of this. I can say in our original proposal for the amendments, there are two things that you've raised. Is the issue about Section 21. We have proposed in the original one this issue about the review board, so that it doesn't, the minister is not the person, but you have an independent structure that can deal with this issue about where people are losing their rights and people are just selling their rights and so on without us even knowing. So we will support the issue about a specific period that must be there. We have a policy on the transfer of rights, and I think we also want to amend that policy to capture some of these things, even if it can't be captured in detail in the legislation. So our intention is also to amend that. This bill is a Section 75 bill confirmed by the because you raised the issue about concurrency. It is a Section 75 bill, although it has to go to the Council of Provinces, but it doesn't have to go it has to go to the National Council of Provinces, but it doesn't have to go to the provinces. The consultation and Dennis will maybe just speak about a little bit about the detail of the number of consultations and number of people we've met and spoken about around these processes. I just don't have those details yet. I hope I've covered most of the issues that has been raised by you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I just want to inform basically on the consultative processes to be followed with regard to the policy. Now, in 2010, when we issued or published the draft policy, we then embarked on a process of consultations from the 20th of September to the 6th of October, and we had 117 consultative meetings in total. In the Northern Cape and Western Cape, we had 34 meetings, Eastern Cape, 69 meetings, in KwaZulu-Natal, we had 14 meetings. And we covered quite a lot of ground, and they were quite, it was well attended meetings. We have embarked with, to the extent that we had meetings under trees, because in some of the rural areas there was simply no meeting halls available. So we've gone out of our way to consult with everybody on the draft policy. And then we have published the final policy on the 20th of June in Government Gazette 35455, Government Notice 474 of 22. We then embarked on a process in NATLEC, and we had a tasking established as part of the NATLEC process. And I was part of the government, part of the tasking. We had community there, we had labor, and we had business in the tasking. And whoever approached me with regard to whether they can be part of the NATLEC process, I said they should consult with the NATLEC conveners. And some of the people that was mentioned today also were informed to go to NATLEC and try to secure possible inclusion there. So we then had a number of meetings on the policy. In fact, we had a sentence by sentence deliberation as a task team on this policy. We basically worked from the first sentence to the last one. And there were some amendments even there suggested, which was then by consensus adopted by the NATLEC as and put forward to the NATLEC meeting. And what was important is that I think there was an acceptance that there was a paradigm shift in terms of how rights will be allocated. So that was a fundamental shift within the policy, that we will do allocations to community-based entities, which in our view now is the cooperative model, which seems to be the best model in terms of the support it can bring to these communities, but also because of the similarities that exist within the different communities, it makes it one of the best possible models. And to go beyond that, we also established a task team between ourselves and DTI, of which I'm also a representative for the department. And we've worked through many of the issues relating to gear, equipment, boats, possible other support in terms of boat building, in terms of other possible avenues we can support. But most important, we also put together a package that we can start informing people of how corporates work, what are the implications, how people function. And on the 7th of June, we had meetings, myself and the members from DTI, we had a meeting in Langebaan where we informed quite a wide range of stakeholders there with regard to how corporates function. Then we had another one in Cape Town where we also explained to people. But then the committee themselves then approached DTI to say, can you from the cooperative division come and talk to us about these things? And in addition to that, some of the farmers of the committee then went to DTI themselves, and they applied to DTI for support in terms of vessels, and many of them then secured vessels in terms of that process. And we said to DTI, we want a structured support package around these cooperatives. So one of the basic things that was discussed when we developed the policy was that it can only work if we have a dedicated and structured support program around this. And I think we are now being able to get the support of the relevant state departments, and also because of what DTI has in place, the interdepartmental committee and all of those things that we basically need to do a proper job. Those are all in place now, and that's the reason why we believe that is the best way to go, because all the support mechanisms are available. But I think fundamentally in all of this is that the department have shown that they respect the wishes of the community. One of the reasons is why this was such a slow process, because every little sentence in that policy was debated over and over, and until there was consensus, then it was accepted. There was a facilitator that actually supported the communities, and some people may want to say this, why it took so long? And we said no. We didn't want to force communities into a certain direction. They wanted to write this policy themselves. And when we engaged, it was always on the basis of how best can we support the communities. But we didn't want to force our views on them. And I think what we have today is a policy, and why it's so difficult, it's something new in terms of fisheries. It was never there before. It's a paradigm shift in terms of having individual rights all the time, and all of a sudden people are not being told. Now we're going to move away for good reasons. And I think if once we implement and we get the correct support package around it, it will work. I actually spoke to DTI and said, we need a fisheries cooperative, and we're going to mold something.
questions, see Mrs. Steyn.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we are getting some clarity on certain issues here now. Chair, I just on the explanation of what we received now, I must still state, just ask the department what is the differences between the 2010 process of the bill. I was trying to Google it quickly, but I couldn't get a hold of it. What changed since the original discussions of the 2010 when you went out in the processes to the one that is before us now? Was the big differences in the bill? Because I'm still worried about the consultation process. I think the department has put a lot of time and effort into consultation of the fishing small scale fishing policy, but I'm a bit concerned that as what was explained now, that the fundamental change will actually happen, that communities will only now have communal fishing rights, and that the consultation process on the bill from the department side was not so big. So I just want clarity on what was the difference on the 2010 when you went out in consultation, and then on the 2013 as we see the bill before us today. What is the main differences on that as one point? And then, Chairperson, I think that for now is the only thing. I wrote something that I will get to now.
Chairperson,
thank you. And thank you, Department, concerning the public hearings, the consultation which Department has done. Really, to me, the consultation was good, was great, very big. And I commend the Department for that. On page 19, concerning cooperatives, where the provincial governments were also encouraged to develop their own cooperative strategies. You know, this thing, let our people try it. I know that the previous one, they failed because they were not helped. There were not enough resources. They were not trained. But let's give them another chance so that they will be trained and they will be helped. And I don't think they will fail if really there is people in department who are ready to help these people, train them, give them the finance, helping them in all areas of the cooperation. I don't think they will fail. They will fail. They failed before because there were no training, there were no funds. You know, let's encourage that. Let us help them leave this thing to emerge, and we will see when we arrive there or what is happening. Thank you.
The chair, I think I agree now that some of the other issues are getting clearer and clearer. I think when we're doing a legislation again, I think we should take that time. You must don't take us for granted that we know that it is too much. Sorry, it just did something. Yeah. Now, does this DDG? You see, we had a certain question last week consisted to the people that you have the issue of the LMRA general, that we didn't look to it comprehensively in terms of this amendment. We have just selected this aspect. And you're speaking of the 40 feet. My comment is that I hope that this closes the path in addressing the plight of the masses of the people who want to this new legislation to speak to their interests. I hope that this new amendment does that. We must not come here 6 months down the line and then we are told that no, there's a limitation in this amendment. It worries me. I don't want to deal with legislation like that, because we should deal with legislation in a very comprehensive manner. I understand that there's this urgency, but I hope all the issues in your response are dealing comprehensively with the plight of the masses, because the interest of the parliament is that we should keep the people happy, not only happy, we should keep them responsive. I like the chairperson when he speaks and the many other members, that we should understand, even the people should understand, that we are not creating a honeymoon in the fisheries. We want to create a responsible environment where our people would benefit. You put it very nicely at the end. You say this, or the gentleman, the other DDG, the new the DDG here, put it very nicely. He also says that we want to curtail the illegal practices in the environment. It will help us to do that. Therefore, I hope maybe you would answer to me that it addresses our concerns on the comprehensive approach that we think we should have taken. I don't think it was wrong for us as MPs to think that this was piecemeal. Now you are trying to answer it might not be. We don't want to take shortcuts in terms of amending legislation, Mr. Clare. What is your view on the proposals of the professor? Because the professor was speaking more on the rephrasing certain things in the legislation that we must put, instead of putting opportunities, but I don't have that document now, but he was only focusing on how we should rephrase certain aspects. And what is your view on that? The last one says, you're speaking about consultation in the Rock Lobster, but what about the SMEs in the commercial sector? Should there be the cut of the 16.7%? What would be the implication in their sustainability and to their functioning? And in your consultation with them tomorrow or the day that you are going to consult, is everybody who is a stakeholder in that level will be consulted? Because you mentioned some few, and I can see some voices that some are saying, but why you are not consulted? Thank you.
Mr. Pandel.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. You know, the one issue I asked you about is that I would like to know how you set out the map, or you have the implementation plan, but how you foresee the 15th of November we start with 139 kilogram of crayfish, and then this bill kicks in January. How do you foresee it? Will there be another allocation in January from the resource? That's something I ask. What will be the tangible benefit for the fishermen outside there? But I'm sure you have had discussions with them, and they have certain expectations. Do you know what those expectations are, and can you share it with us, please? And then you talk about that the TAC and the OMP and how you would do this in consultation with other role players, and not by decree. You know, this is the way we say it's going to happen. We make hard choice. You say you're in consultation, but is that in consultation? It sounds to me more like by decree. And I think we shouldn't trample on some people's rights to give other people rights. It's also important to not do that in law. So those letters you talked about that I received from the recreational fishing sector, which is, and you say you're not targeting them. The perception out there is that you are really targeting them because they are a soft target, and I don't agree with what you say that people do recreational fishing just to pay the garden worker. You know, it's a lame argument. People do recreational fishing because there is place in the bill and the law for them to do what they want to do. They also want their 4 crayfish a day or whatever it is they go. So I go to the post office and I buy a permit. I didn't last year, but I usually do, to also get my couple of crayfish because I love crayfish. You know, it's a very nice taste. It cost me a lot of money to get it anyway. It's penny-wise, pound foolish to think that you can buy a permit and go to sea and just get 4 crayfish for the day and think it will be cost-effective. You could rather buy it. It would be much cheaper. But that is not the point. The point is that those people are made provision for in the bill. Are you interested in taking them out of the bill totally? And, are you dependent on those 60 and 70 and 100 and 200? I think I bought the permit. It was 500 and something rand. If I want to go fishing and I want to go catch my rock lobster and if I want to collect bait, it was 560 rand the year before last that I had to take out. Are you not dependent on that money or don't you get that money? Is that money not used for something that you are now wanting to give up? Don't you think that, it just sounds, if you're getting in this money, you must rely on it somewhere in the budget. Where is this money going to come from? Because you must, if you take away something somewhere, it must have an implication somewhere else. I mean, it just makes sense, you know. So I would like to know that. It's something that I just feel myself, you know, and like you said, you feel guilty that you take away rights from people, but you have it yourself, so you would give up yours voluntarily in the department just to justify that, or to make it softer, to I wouldn't like rights from somebody. I think it's the wrong way to look at it. To kill somebody to get rights for somebody else in that sense of the word, I just don't see it as this is not how I understood these amendments to be. Call it the nationalization of the resources and the redistribution to other people. I mean, I'm sure this was not the intention of this bill. I'm sure the intention of this bill was to incorporate people in a phased manner that would make sense and would make everybody live. And not take away from some other people. I would like to hear your opinion on it, and you say you have to make hard decisions on it, then explain those hard decisions and how you can take it. Thank you.
Members, I think we have reached a point now wherein, as we engage with the submissions and also with the responses from the department, that we equally make recommendations. I think it shall assist us going forward, so that we do not move around all the time. Mr. Abram, Mr. Steyn.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yeah, one has to at some stage or the other come to the crunch. But when you do that, then you naturally have to go clause by clause, weigh it up against representations made, what changes people recommended, look at the feasibility thereof, and that sort of stuff. But I just have one or two, couple of things to ask, Chair. second round that I'm taking. Chairperson, you know, one of the biggest problems in passing legislation, very good, you know, to put the law on the statute book. But then you've got to ask yourself, are there any unintended consequences? Now, I see somewhere here that there is an assertion, very emphatic, that the state law advisors, I saw it in slide number 9. The bill is not a find and replace exercise. It is legally correct and has been certified by the state law advisor as such. Now, you know, we have seen over the many years state law advisors tell you that this thing is 100% it's above board. When it comes to the law having been passed and somebody decides to challenge it, and you have another finding. So, and that is happening with a reasonable regularity. So if we pass a bill here, Chairperson, we've got to see to it that the bill will stand the test of any scrutiny. Secondly, Chairperson, I think it is essential that the department must actually brief the committee on the implementation plan. You see, you can have a law on the statute book. There must be an implementation plan. How are you going to do it? And that is the crux of the matter. And I think there are many people who, ordinary fishers, you see, Chairperson, when departments go out and do consultation, many people unfortunately see it as a possibility. Hell, you know, if this thing happens, it's something that will benefit us. So one has to be very precise. And I think, Chairperson, I've heard somewhere that if you take the current commercial fishers, for every 1,000 kilometers, every 1,000 kilograms less that they fish, amounts to the loss of 4 jobs. That's what I was taught. So it's also something that needs to be addressed. You know, it's a question of you want to kill the snake, but you must see that you don't break your stick in wanting to kill the snake. You want to achieve something, but you may be perhaps creating something else. That brings me to the whole issue of unintended consequences. Is the department satisfied? I can see the passion with which these officials here have been driving this whole issue. Are they satisfied that they have looked at all possibilities? Because when we now go down to looking at the bill clause by clause, that is what counts. We need to know exactly where do we stand. Of course, we want to empower our people. We must empower our people. But in the process, we've got to see that the goose that lays the golden egg, in this case the sea, is able to provide that golden egg. And I want to know, Chairperson, are our scientists, both departmental and independent, are they au fait with the provisions that are being sought? And are they satisfied that it will survive whatever its broad objectives are? Other issue, Chairperson, that we need to bear in mind is that Uh,
now, Chairperson, the other issue that one has to bear in mind is what I am advised, that many of the small-scale fishers, I think currently, make use of the recreational permits in order to harvest. And the small-scale policy currently is inshore-based. And therefore, a maximum sustainable yield or total allowable catch should be set in order to get an amount so that it can be shared. Because you must now remember, Chair, that once you have established those co-ops, there'll have to be sharing taking place. So we need to take account of that. There was one other thing that I thought was very, very relevant, but I don't know where did I lose it on the way. In any case, Chair, if you would be kind enough to allow me when it comes to my mind, I would love to raise it. Chairperson, you know there is we have the old saying, too many cooks spoil the broth. Now, currently I understand that it is DTI that has been making available the boats, those beautiful boats that you people were talking about. It's apparently coming from DTI. Now, if there are other role players at government level, other departments, that are going to make available some or other form of assistance, is this being coordinated? Because, for example, if you take agriculture, the agricultural department is supposed to be mandated to look at agriculture per se. But rural development also engages in agriculture. And so does DTI engage in agriculture. So we need to know whether you people are working in sync. I did hear Mr. Stevens mentioning somewhere, whether today or some other day, that there is coordination or some degree of interaction with the department. But, Chairperson, what I wanted to say is, you see, this whole issue of fronting, this whole issue of we will tighten the law to provide for this and we will tighten the law to provide for that. You've got an RDP house, if you haven't lived in it for 10 years and you've given it to somebody, we shall take it back. Chairperson, in practice, how many are taken back? You go to the townships today. Many people that come from foreign countries take over those RDP houses. They are there. Not that they shouldn't be somewhere. But you see, we must accept that fronting, when we had the Group Areas Act, for example, on the statute books, there was also fronting taking place. There were many businesses where you have Mrs. van der Merwe sitting there on one of the stools, but the owner was someone else. She was the front. So I don't know, Chair. I don't know. I would still love to see how a foolproof law can be implementable to cut out fronting altogether. Like the other day, I think Sunday papers, I laud the idea that officials should be stopped from doing business with state departments. Let me tell you, Chairperson, it will still happen, in spite of that law. A proverbial has many ways of killing the cat rather than strangling it. So it's going to happen, Chair. All one can do is to try and create laws where you minimize. But I would not tell the country that, for argument's sake, a particular law is going to stop this thing completely. Human beings, Chairperson, God gave them the capacity to come up with all sorts of plans. Otherwise, you wouldn't have had coming from a perspective where one knows very little about fishing. I've said it before as by a lekker course. Unfortunately, we don't know much about it. We don't live around yet. Maar ik weet jullie mag bij een moeite to catch fish and to make it possible for us to enjoy it. But continue doing that. And that in the process that you are empowered and that you increase and better your station in life. That would be my prayer for you. Thank you very much. Mrs. Tay?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, my question that I forgot to ask was specifically also geared towards the voorlegging of
presentation
of Professor Butterworth. I was specifically interested in the two that clause 2 came with. Says we need to change the clause under the need to promote equitable access and change that to promote equitable opportunities. And I think that also had to do with the number or allowable catch or the reduction or the availability of fish stocks. If you can explain to me that one again, and maybe I don't know if it could be the role of the state law advisor to help us at this stage in this, because to me the wording equitable opportunities is also makes sense, especially if it's a variable number or what will happen in 1 year. Remember this changes that we're making to the legislation, we make them for the next 10, 15 years. So what will happen suddenly if someone comes up and says that there is not enough of this specific species available now? What is in the plan, and would this not be covering the department specifically on this one? And then the second one also was the need for the... It's basically, in my mind, linked to the same issue, the wording multi-species approach. Because what would happen if next year or in 2 years or 3 years' time you come up and say that there's a specific species not available anymore and this community got the fishing rights to that specific species. So will that not cover us? I'm just looking at it from a legal perspective so that you don't, you are still having your options available and open. And just maybe for the department's information, I've been speaking about the whole thing of the website and the IT. I've been trying to get the fishing policy on the DAF website. You don't get it. You can Google, you can put in the name. We got it on the old one, the NDA. Yeah, it's on the old one. But it's just maybe for the department to say, I don't know if there's anyone else except for the fishing section, yeah, but just maybe share that some of the things that I've always been saying. If you go into DAF, the new website of the department, and you Google it and you look under the policies, and it's not there, but you can find it under the old website of the department. So just for interest sake for the department on that. And then just Chairperson, the last one that I wanted to mention is the preparedness of the department. If we now agree to this bill and it gets processed, how much time would you need and how ready are you to implement this? Because as far as I can understand this needs to happen quite urgently. The process needs to be put in place quite urgently. You need to start having this in place in January or by December. When will you finalize the process? And do you have the capacity? And I asked earlier, I didn't get an answer on that. I would look quite interested to see what the medium-term framework will tell us tomorrow about allocation towards departments. And I want to see if there would be money put towards fishing or towards that for the fishing allocation, because if we don't have the money to implement this next year, this will not work. Even if you have departmental people positive towards it, but if you don't have the money to back up your plan, it won't work. So what is your readiness and what plan do you have in place if we do not get money shifted towards this specific section? Thank you, Chair.
government is finding it difficult now to move forward. I have asked that if we can equally be taking ourselves forward in terms of the actual recommendation. Thus far, there has been an issue raised by, I think, LRC that talks to the traditional fishers in addition to customers. There has been an issue that would have to begin to put to a test the consultation process. That consultation process speaks to anybody who might have to raise an objection to a legislation about its constitutionality and standing the test of time. But we have been given a very clear feedback on that one in terms of the details of the processes that the department has gotten into. Number of sessions held in the respective provinces and so on. The question that we shall have heard about whether we have a hybrid scenario here, a response has been given wherein others are monkeys and others are trolleys. Monkeys here refers to policy-based communal, the monkey road, and then the trolley road wherein you have your commercial, you know, small-scale fisher scenarios. Part of that consultation talks to the setting up of the National Task Team, wherein it has become apparent that it does not necessarily, it did not necessarily have to exclude anyone. The processes that have been alluded to, the number of sessions held in the respective provinces. Now, that takes care of those, if I hear it very well. Now, for me, I really, well, mentioning has been made about NEDLAC. That stage has since been surpassed. And then the small-scale fisheries policy coming before Parliament or not, frankly speaking, that has been a matter for us to program. Yes, we did receive the small-scale fisheries policy sometime last year, as a matter of fact, even before Cabinet sat and agreed upon it. And it has become, it had become a responsibility of ours here to program it. And I remember very well the department briefing us on that small-scale policy, right? For us then to have taken it further, it has been a question as to how best, because we kept on asking ourselves a question that was to suggest that what then happens with this policy in terms of its implementability or in terms of its own implementation. And then talk was about this very bill that is before us. For us to be able to say, because we were asking ourselves a question that Mr. Van Dalen has been asking all along. Where else would you get the fish? Because fish already shall have been allocated. We kept on asking that question until we got this bill. Right? And that then became an answer.
also in implementing or in the course of implementation of the very bill that we are about, giving all those kinds of responses and answers to that question. Questions that we had asked earlier on in the course of us looking at this small-scale fisheries policy. Well, that question was quite pertinent. You have a policy. You have expectations. What next? Then the question, or rather, the issue of the bill itself came by for us then to say, you are now practically taking this process forward in terms of its own implementation. Perhaps the issue at hand, which deals more with the detail and the operational issues, becomes that of your implementation plan and also your regulatory framework. That's an issue outside of what we are dealing with here. Or if you like, as a consequence of what we are dealing with here. We shall then get to that stage. But here before us, it is a legislation that has to be looked at in terms of its own amendments. And as such, therefore, if any recommendations are to be put forward, we are at liberty as Parliament that we engage with those recommendations and be united in terms of our own agreement going forward. That's how I thought, you know, we might wish to be dealing with this matter going forward, members. Yes, a number of questions have been raised from the inputs from stakeholders, the responses from the department. We also need us to engage with those to clarify our minds further as we move towards saying at the end what then happens going forward with the legislation before us. You want to quickly take a quick shot on responses to some of the questions and comments, and then of course also with some of those that I've just made mention of, taking us forward.
Yeah. I think what we can do, I don't know what is the reason that we're asking just open. Now we should go now immediately after their response, maybe to the actual legislation, go through and then try to fit in the things that we think.
Yeah, specifically with recommendations, if
yeah. But I think you see, you raise an issue about putting a defined term in terms of the selling of the rights. I don't know whether it falls where. It falls when we deal with the details on that. Or but you should guide us. I think immediately we should.
On recommendation.
Yes, sure.
It falls on recommendation. Mrs. Day?
Chairperson, and just one other point. I think, Chair, I've just read through our meetings that we had in the last 2 years in the portfolio. We never dealt with a small-scale fisheries policy per se. We dealt with other issues of fishery, but not the small-scale fishery. We dealt with transformation, we dealt with other issues, but never with the small-scale fishery policy. And I think, Chair, that is one of the things that make us ask these questions, because obviously we must understand the questions so that we can put our minds around the implications of the bill. If it will have a profound implication, we need to understand the implication before we agree, and we can make recommendations on certain wording in the bill.
Mr. Stevens?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to try to be as brief as possible. I think the first issue that was raised by Honorable Stein about still the confusion that is there around the bill and the policy. The issue that we have raised in 2010 was that consultation and that gazette was around the small-scale fishing policy, not the current bill. The amendment bill was
first published in April 2013, the comprehensive bill that we talked about. I think the issue that was raised, there was, looks like there's some confusion about the process in 2010. It was around a small scale fishing policy that was gazetted, and there was consultation around that process for cabinet to approve it eventually. However, the amendment was first published in 2013 in April. So I hope that clarifies this matter. Respectfully, we would disagree in the same way that Masi Fundisi has disagreed with the Honorable or the esteemed Professor Butterwood around the wording. His conclusion or inference was that that wording would imply open access. The wording, if we give access to fishing rights for small scale. And we don't see that as an open access. The fisheries, in all fisheries, the understanding is that it is managed in a regulatory framework that you don't have open access. And that also speaks to the issue about the customary rights matter, which LRC have raised, and they've indicated they have a court case which will determine that interpretation of the customary rights to this thing, to the matter. So the changes that was proposed by Professor Butterwood would have unintended consequences, because that would then, if you say only opportunity to the excess, it can be then challenged to say there won't be access to all of the small scale fishes. So that word, the opportunity to access, and I think that is not the intention of the policy, but that the committee can deliberate, and it's in your powers to deliberate on that matter. The issue about multi-species, it is the common understanding when we talk about multi-species. It's a common acceptance in the FAO around the issue about when we speak about multi-species. There must not be a confusion that we are saying, it doesn't only apply to the small-scale fishes. It also applies to the commercial fishing. Someone made the example of abalone. There are many people that in the old allocation process were only allowed to have access to one species. What we are saying when we change the multi-species is that the opportunity exists for you to have more than one species. And that's why we want to use that word multi-species approach. Dennis, you can talk a little bit about the policy and the bill further. Mr. Banga, I think you raised the issue about the SMME, and I don't know, maybe it's the chairperson of the SMME forum that sits behind you. There's no contradiction. We are saying that SMME is any structure. The road is not monkey, it's monkey, the basket. So I don't want to be confused, Honorable Chairperson, that I raised the derogatory term around this thing. See the media here. We unfortunately, myself and Honorable Spain's mother tongue is Afrikaans, and so we could be misunderstood. Monkey, yeah. Not the monkey. Please. I'm just worried that people will misunderstand what we're saying. That's why I'm saying the basket. So if you are on the trolley road, that road is for the SMMEs and so on. But on the
mighty, the basket route, mighty route, that is for the small scale fishes. Mr. Van Dalen, Honorable Van Dalen, sorry. Let me quickly try to explain that process around the implementation plan. The first step which is taking place, which we are busy with, is the issue about, firstly, we must verify. The first step is to verify all small-scale fishes. To say, these 7,776, which are on our records, are they the legitimate and only ones? So in Houtbay, in Komiki, in Kosi Bay, are there any other people we have not seen? So that process, we will have an independent process to verify all of. So now we will have, and we'll publish that list, to say this is the list of all small-scale fishes which are identified. But all the rights, even in the commercial sector, the TACs are determined on an annual basis. So if there's a TAC for West Coast rock lobster, which will be determined, finalized hopefully in this week, it will be for that 2013 and 14 season. So there will not be an extra, even if the bill passes, you will get an extra allocation because the TAC is set for the season. I hope that makes them, even for everyone that have, maybe have that misunderstanding. So for each and every sector, when the TAC is determined, it is determined for a season, which are different periods of times during the season, and that is cast in stone. It doesn't move in that season. So the first, 15th of November, when the West Coast Rock Clubs, for instance, will be now allocated, it will be for that season 2013-14. Most of these rights, also a very important concept that we must understand, most of these sectors, already some of them already have an allocation in the West Coast Rock Lobster and the lionfish, have an allocation allocated to the what we call now interim relief, which I don't want to call that word, it's a swear word. So it was already taken care of the small scale sector, in a way. But the others that will come available, like abalone is next year, 2015 is the West Coast Rock Lobster, this mighty, the basket will be filled up as these sectors becomes available. So the benefit for a small scale fisher now is that you don't live from hand to mouth. You now have, if the bill passes, you have a legal right to access to that basket of species for a number of years, not for per season. Like, and that's a very important difference, because you can organize your life. Like, you remember before 2005, there was also the medium term, and then there was people. That's what people were saying, we can't make investments, we can't plan our lives because the rights allocation process were too short. That's why there was a long-term rights allocation. Now the same with the small scale, we want to give them a longer-term right, not an annual, and then the annual you come and fight with us. So you will have a right, but your basket, your mind kit gets filled up as some of these rights comes available over time. But some of them already has you covered into that place. The difference now, and I think it's a very important difference, even in the allocation of the commercial rights, we were just a regulator. We give you the rights and then we regulate the process. Now we are saying the changes that we are putting, there's a developmental and there's a key words, key stuff in the small scale fishing policy. We are going to make our hands dirty. We must be, to prevent, I think Honorable Member Abram have raised this issue about organizing what we'll call an effort response unit, which, like many organizations, I mean, many have come to complain to the Honorable Committee also. Around, for instance, I can mention Kalahari, Penguin, all of these people are saying some individuals have swindled them out of their rights. Now, for us to get involved, because sometimes the civil matter between people and so on, we are saying now we want to establish a multidisciplinary unit which have legal auditing and community facilitation skills in that unit. Which, if someone complains to you now, we will immediately go and investigate that matter. So that we can deal, not wait for years and people are worried that their rights are not, or they are losing out on their quotas. We will act in the, and that's the intention, and we are already talking about the terms of reference and looking at the skills space for that, for that, for that group. I've even begging the minister for me to make me lead that group and not make me just to come and speak to you, because I'm a very shy person. The unintended consequences, I must say, the issue, the very important issue that Honorable Abram has raised is that we are happy as a department that these changes will empower us to do those things that the communities have spoken to you about and give us the legal basis for this thing. And we are trying to, through a process of, because the wisdom doesn't only exist in the department. With working with those communities and those organizations, the NGOs, to find, to mitigate those unintended consequences, to mitigate one of these unintended consequences might be the issue about how the cooperatives will function, and that people like they were CCs and trust with, and they were family members. They are family members sometimes, and then they, because there's argument in the family, this one, they are just breaking up. So it's, those could be some of the unintended consequences that the cooperatives, for one or other reason, people are just don't want to work with each other. So that is why we want to invest lots of time and energy and be patient working with people to show them that, and the training is important around this thing. It's around, important around this method. I think, honorable members, the expectations, honorable Van Dalen, which you have raised, what is our view, what is the expectations of the people? I mean, you have listened to those things. The expectations of people is that we must give them an opportunity. We must treat them, these years that they've been denied this long. So we are trying to work with them to meet those expectations. Part of this work that we are doing is also not to be unrealistic, to work with people. Sometimes we might not agree, because the one of the issues is around, which I've raised last Friday, is the issue about the science. We are not going to compromise, although people, we are trying to bring indigenous knowledge in, but we're not going to compromise on the issues about the science around those things. And that is where we might differ with some of our colleagues. The issue, I'm not the crayfish issue, I must be very clear around this matter, the lobster matter. And I also don't want to be misunderstood that these were not my words. I'm just, I repeat it. I'm selling it as I've as it's been told to me in our consultation with the they've made three suggestions with the recreational people. They've made three suggestions to us yesterday. There was lots of emotion and lots of issues, but we are seriously considering those suggestions to us. So, and I don't want to speak to them through this committee, but we will speak tomorrow, all of us together. And we are trying to find a common ground or consensus around this thing. But there must be principles, Honorable Van Dalen. A principle of where recreation recreational fishers, like yourself, if you are a recreational fisher, or whoever is a recreational fisher, our livelihoods is something else. You get your income from something else. Where the comparison with Naomi who sits in front of me, her income is just from that fishing. So if I have to compare and make that choice, do I where someone is a CEO or he works in a government or he works in some other place where he gets an income for his livelihood, and I have to compare that person with someone who wants to fish for recreational purpose, which is protected in law. We are not changing that thing. But then if I have to make a choice, my choice would be obvious. And I think all our choices should be obvious. We must strengthen and empower those people whose livelihoods is dependent on the allocation of fish. And unfortunately, I cannot be apologetic about that thing. The example that I made, which I'm also challenged legally by my officials, is to say, I want to encourage our officials in fisheries, please don't go and get apply for as a principal, go and apply for recreational permits. Not to replace the recreational or to have a lame duck sort of excuse why we must cut from them. And I've said we are not only going to cut from the recreational people, we are cutting from the industry also. Because it's important, as I said, to meet the recovery targets that has been set there. So, and we are not cutting really enough. We are just, and with what we say to them, we are reducing the days when you can go and fish. You had days that you could go and fish about 57, we are cutting it to 26 now. And we've agreed yesterday, Christmas, Easter, public holidays. You can still go and catch your crayfish. We are not going to allow for you to go and do that during the week. You can go weekends and so on. But those are the proposals tomorrow. I don't want to preempt tomorrow in our conversations with and the people that we are invited to that meeting is all the representatives of all of the sectors in that meeting to find a common ground around this thing. I hope I've covered again. There's one thing, Honourable Chairperson, which I missed with you raised in the first round, is the issue about subsistence and the hybrid issue that you raised. Maybe my English is also not too good because to understand it. But what we are saying in the Act, we don't have to add small scale and keep subsistence there, because small scale, as I've explained, the definition encompasses everything. So there's no duplication around those things. That's why in a legal way, we are saying subsistence can be replaced by small scale fishing, because the definition is there. Lastly, I think Honourable Van Dale and Honourable Abraham raised this. We are looking at the implementation process of the small scale fishing policy through the amendments in a scientific way. Our scientists, someone asked, does our scientists support this? Of course, we had our internal debate and they support us. In fact, they are leading the process to define where are the fishing areas, which will be a consequence of this amendment, which will be part of the regulations. What should be in the basket, in the monkey? We have consulted around those matters also with communities. We are not finalized those things yet, but it's 90% finalized. So those details are in a process so that we are not have a thumbs up to say in Honda Club Bay there will be this species and there's none of those species is there available. We are
day we do not have lunch. Yeah, that is to be served. Anyway, that's the response. We were also, because we are likely going to be called into the house anytime after 2, we had thought that we would get a venue, G26, just behind Parliament, National Assembly. We failed. There are 3 other committees that are meeting at the same time, also dealing with legislation. So chances are we are still back to the original venue, which is the M514 at Marx Building. In other words, after lunch. Any specific recommendations going forward? Mrs. Stein?
Chairperson, I think we have heard what we wanted to hear. We have asked all the questions, and I think we propose that we read section clause by clause and finalize the board chair. I still just need to say that I am concerned about the constitutionality, not of the ball, but then of the sports coefficient policy, but it's something that we could tackle on another time when the department maybe comes to the portfolio and explain to us the processes and how they're going to do it and the things, but I don't think there's anything else we can do on the ball by just reading clause by clause, Chair.
There were 2 times I see this on my record that we presented.
Wait. Okay, that's a proposal for Mr. Stay. We were meant to deliberate with the legislation, taking into account both the submissions from the stakeholders. We've heard the fishermen, we've heard LRC and a number of other players. We've listened to what the department had to say in terms of its own responses to all the issues raised during that public hearing. Now, ours then was meant to be an engagement with all of those processes. We have attempted, we have now reached a point wherein we cannot make any further recommendations. What is to happen? Typically, when we have to make those recommendations, it means, therefore, that Mr. Van Dalen, there shall have to be a process of the department having listened with all the recommendations, they go away and come up with another set of appeal. In other words, come up with a proposed bill with amendments that shall have been taken into account. In other words, with recommendations and all these other things that we shall have said, they go away and they come back to us. Then that we do the clause by clause. Otherwise, if we say now, as we speak, we're doing a clause by clause, it is to be literally on this. Without any recommendation, unless we are saying we do not have any recommendation, then we can do the clause by clause. Mr. Stay?
Chairperson, I think I've said that I'm clear on the thing. I think we are ready for a clause by clause. The only recommendation would be that the department comes back and give us an updated then version of the implementation plan and how it will fit into the small-scale policy so that we know what the processes are, so that we can just monitor the readiness of the department.
That is Mr. Steyn's view, am I right? Can we hear other views, if there are any?
You put a recommendation yourself here, and also the professor recommended rephrase of the sentences, and then I asked that question. I don't know whether I don't get it correctly, or the department is saying we want to be rigid in terms of implementing. That rephrase does not assist anything in terms of rectifying what we want to achieve from the process. You see why I'm asking this thing of a professor, because the professor is a scientist, and the DDG have made mention that the professor is his advisor. Now, it's unfortunate that document I don't have now, but I could hear that it was making sense, the proposal of opportunities and so on. What is do you think that we can consider? And the legality of what the chairperson is proposing. Chairperson, the legality of what also you are proposing yourself. Because that's a very important part that you are making to protecting. Because we're not only protecting the resources, we're protecting also the communities, that they are not abused by big companies. The one you say, let us have, you were talking about protecting these rights, that people do not have out of the way right to sell this rights. What can we put to make sure that we have a regulated arrangement that protects that? The department didn't come clear, unless I didn't hear, it didn't come clear. Into that. Therefore, I mean, I think those aspect of recommendations that maybe they should reflect, because that's a very big recommendation you have made. It's a very big. It might look small, but it's very big. Meaning we have to look into the legalities of that. The state may possibly advise us to talk to that. Thank you,
Mrs.
Chairperson,
I'm being troubled by Mrs. Day.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I support your recommendation. It is how it should go about. We must not do the close by close now. We'll do them later when the department went back and comes with the what we have been discussing and their recommendations. Then we go to the bill clause by clause. Thank you.
Mr. Thank? Sorry.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to caution that this bill is very urgent. We have so little time for error. And the department has said they are comfortable with the recommendations they have put in front of us, that they can do what they can do, and then next year the bill in totality will come to the department where all these other issues will be raised and we can deal with them. So I would suggest that we go through it clause by clause, and I get the feeling if we don't do it now, we won't have time to come back for recommendation, send it to cabinet, they decide on it as well. I mean, it might be a delay in the whole process. We must just get some legal advice on that. I know the bill is with us, but I just want to caution that we don't have the time, the luxury of time, to do what needs to be done if we had more time. If we had more time, I would come up with a big list of recommendations that we could change in this bill that are negative or that are prohibitive in getting our small-scale fishers what they need. But I would just like to caution on the time that we have to do what we need. And I think that if the department is comfortable that they can do what they need to do to empower the small-scale fishermen, I would suggest that we go ahead and do it as we have planned today.
Can I propose that we break for lunch and then we allow the department to do what they need to do, and then we come back after lunch, and then we take it from there? With all the recommendations and the inputs that have been thrown.
Yeah, please. I would want to them to not forget this aspect of the prophet. I'm going to read it myself. And then prepare on it.
Yeah,
sure. Oh, you went good.
The time now is 25 minutes past 12. Can we then come back to the set venue at M514 at 2 o'clock to take this process forward? Is that okay? M514, Mark's building.